Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to church this morning. My name is Mary Johnson, and I serve our church as the newsletter editor, and I've been a member here for 35 years. And in the pulpit this morning, we have our interim minister, the Reverend Sunshine Wolf, who will be with us for the next 2 years. Everyone is invited to stay following this worship service for fellowship, conversation, and refreshments in our fellowship hall, the Kate Worker Room, right through those doors behind me. And if you're a newcomer here, we extend you a special welcome. And if you'll fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of the hymnal and put it in the offering plate or hand it to an usher, we'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about all the activities and programs going on here at church. If you have children with you today, they may certainly stay for the service, but we do have a professionally staffed nursery for infants and young children. And in September, our religious education classes for children from pre-K through middle school will begin again. And we invite families to sit together. So if you're a kid and you're not sitting with your family or the adult who brought you, please go ask them to join you. And if you'd like to learn more about this church and about Unitarian Universalism, there is an information rack in our fellowship hall where there are pamphlets, newsletters, and other information you can certainly are certainly welcome to take home with you. And now, I invite you to turn to your neighbors and greet them, especially the ones you don't know yet. A short announcement for the good of the church. Please come to the microphone.
Hello, I am Tracy Howe Koch, and I am leading the coming of age program for the youth this year. Problem is, I need somebody to help me. I'm actually happy to plan the whole thing, but I need another body in the room, and actually I'm going to be gone one weekend in October, so I needed them for that too. But it's only going to be twice a month, probably the first and third Sunday, so the commitment isn't huge, but our youth need us, and I really need you to help me, so please let me know if you're interested. The second thing is, please mark your calendars in September, probably towards the end. I don't know if you remember, we talked about the 100-mile dinner that we were going to do to help benefit the UUSC and their Gardens for Haiti project. That hopefully will happen towards late September, and we're asking everybody, it'll be a party, it'll be a fundraiser. And then those of you who garden, bring your food, because the whole goal is to have the whole dinner provided with things within a 100-mile radius of Alton, St. Louis, Edwardsville, wherever you happen to live. So mark your calendar. Well, you can't mark them. Just keep it in your mind.
Good morning. My name is Sarah Lazars. I have a few things. I got word from Rachel Lappin this week that our new website is going to go live in days, just days. And she wanted me to extend a special thank you to Jerry Johnson for being our webmaster for so long with the old website. So many people found us through that website. He did a great job with it, and we're ready for the next step. Also, our church is going to be on the historic homes tour of Alton in October. And I'm looking for some volunteers for, I believe, it's the first Sunday in October. Don't quote me on the date, though. It's the beginning of October. And I need a few people to be here to greet visitors and help people around the building for however long you can stay. I believe it's from 12 to 5 on that day. Also, some of you saw I posted on UU Friends that I'm looking for information about the building. I am aware of historical documents in the building to look at and the Historical Society, but if you have any oral history about the building, information that could help me write up something to put in the program for the tour, it'd be most appreciated. So, thanks.
Good morning. My name is John Miller, and I'm from Dubuque. I'm a member of the beautiful downtown Dubuque Unitarian Fellowship. And I came down here to visit Ferguson and share in the sorrow. And I want to share an observation. This morning I turned on a news network, the name I won't use, and over they showed the dark pictures of the night violence, of which there was some. And yesterday I spent most of the day in the area where Florissant is the area, of course. I was there, and it was as peaceful as you can imagine. I took marvelous pictures of wonderful people with whom I spoke, and the only time I felt a little bit nervous is when I approached a police car, and in dressed like this, dressed reasonably well, and I felt a little bit uncomfortable because one never knows. That's my experience. Anyway, peace organization in Dubuque that's trying to develop more peaceful circumstances in Dubuque. So certainly I'm down here for that. My name is John Harper Miller, middle initial H, but Facebook presence on where I shall put these marvelous pictures is John Q. Miller. Thank you. And thank you for your welcoming. Thank you.
I have one additional announcement. The Worship Associates last Monday met, and we had really great conversations. And the great decision of the night was, do we have two services or not? And I caused a little bit of trouble, because that's my job, by suggesting maybe we had a second service at 1:30 p.m., and then I made an excuse and left the room and let them talk about it. And at this time, this is what we're planning, is to have worship services at 10:30 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. on Sundays for just a few months, just to try it out, see if it works. We will continue to have religious education for children and youth in the first service time, and then we're looking at community building for children and youth who might attend at the 1:30 time, and then we will have adult religious education from 11:50 to 12:50 every Sunday, and sometimes that will be me teaching, sometimes that will be groups. There will be multiple options, and so we're going to experiment with this for a while. And if you have any questions, feedback, you think maybe we didn't consider this or that, please talk to me, talk to Mary, who's the begrudging chair of this group for the moment, or to any of the worship associate team, and let us know. But like I said, we're going to try it for a few months until about December, and then we'll look at it and see if this is something we want to continue. All right. And I believe that concludes this morning's announcements. Thank you.
I invite you to move to the microphone and share briefly any gratitudes or celebrations you bring with you to church this morning. There will be a time for concerns and sorrows in a few moments.
My name is Nancy Kniff. About 14 and a half weeks ago, if you want to be exact, I hurt my foot, broke off a small piece of bone, disconnected tendon. It's been a slow progress. Found out this past Wednesday that the tendon is fully connected, so I don't have to have surgery. But the shard that broke off split in two and may be poking the tendon, causing pain, and the end of the bone where it broke off may have to be shaved. So I still have 4 weeks until I find out if I need surgery. So I still need some love, please. But I'm just thrilled about the tendon because that's the bad one. That would be bad. So just yay.
Hi, I'm Robin. I have a bunch of things to be grateful for. First of all, thank you everybody who contributed yesterday to Fourth Saturday Lunch. It was, again, a success, and we served probably about 90 people, I think, but we got rid of over 120 sandwiches and stuff like that. So we're continuing on, and if anything you could do to help contribute to either personal care items or food products, you know, we would appreciate that. Second thing, some of you may know my mother was in the hospital and had some surgery. Gosh, I don't even remember when, July sometime. Originally they thought she had had a cracked sternum, and then they found that she had lung cancer. The good news is that they were able to get the nodule, they got the lobe out that had a small nodule of cancer. She doesn't need anything else above and beyond that for chemo or anything, but she had to spend about over three weeks in the hospital because of some other complications. But she's good, and she's getting ready to go on an Alaska cruise next week, so yay! So I'm very excited about that. And my great aunt also had some illnesses, and she's feeling better. But my last joy is yesterday Margaret had an opportunity to audition with a violist from the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra to be a student of his, and he accepted her. So, so please send all your good juju today. She has two orchestra auditions today, and we want her to land it. So send her the good energy, please.
Not to be repetitive, but I just wanted to thank everyone that showed up to help for Saturday yesterday. It was a great success. Noah, so thanks again. I now invite you to move to the microphone to share briefly any sorrows or concerns you carry with you this morning.
Well, my first concern is that Willis is not doing very well right now. That's the reason he's not here with me today. He's having several different health issues and mobility issues, and as most of you already know, we're preparing to move. Now, I would like for all of you to put a big smile on your face, maybe even make a funny face, because I don't want to cry here. Okay, I'm going to make my little farewell address. I've got my hanky just in case, but I'm going to try not to. All right, everybody smiling? It is with very mixed emotions that we say goodbye to all of you dear friends. Willis and I have been here for 9 years, almost exactly, and we have loved it. The area, the culture, the opportunities for both enjoyment and for service. But most of all, the friends we've made, and the church and the friends we have made right here in this church have been especially precious to us. So it's hard to leave for those reasons, but our daughter in Minnesota, Daphne, needs us right now, and no doubt down the road we will be needing her. So we're looking forward to being with her and her two lovely daughters. But we will be missing all of you. It is time, though, for us to move on to our next chapter. And with permission from Sabrina, I'm using a quote from her recent sermon on perseverance. It says, "I can endure tedium over time and in a confined space, doing something that I don't especially relish, expecting nothing in return because of love." We are leaving on Thursday. Be assured, though, that as we look back over our lives, the years we've spent right here will be among the happiest of our memories. Thank you for all the love and support that you have given us over the years.
May the gratitude and celebrations among us this day become a blessing to all. And may the concerns and sorrows of each be carried in all our hearts, a burden shared become a load lightened. The prelude begins our worship service as Benjamin Heft lights our chalice. Thank you. to worship words this morning are from the 5th century poet Kalidasa. Look to this day, for it is life, the very life of life. In its brief course lie all the verities and realities of your existence, the bliss of growth, the glory of action, the splendor of beauty. For yesterday is only a vision, but today, well lived, makes every yesterday a dream of happiness, and every tomorrow a vision of hope. Look well, therefore, to this day. Let us worship together.
Good morning.
Good morning.
A little more energetic this Sunday, I hear it. Okay. I invite you to kind of wiggle a little bit. And then rise as your spirits and bodies allow. And join in singing hymn number 389, which will be up here on the screen, Gathered Here.
Responsive reading is in the gray hymnal, number 610, The Journey of Love, or it will also be projected on the wall behind me. The words of Muhammad Iqbal. When in our hearts is the burning of desire?
It is true that we are made of dust, and the world is also made of dust, but the dust has motes rising.
Whence comes the drive in us?
We look to the starry sky and love storms in our hearts.
Whence comes that storm?
The journey of love is a very long journey.
But sometimes, with a sigh, you can cross that vast desert.
Search and search again without losing hope.
You may find sometime a treasure on your way.
My heart and my eyes are all devoted to the vision.
Freely we have received of gifts that minister to our needs of body and spirit. Gladly we bring to our church and its wide concerns a portion of this bounty. We have been greatly blessed. Let us now give generously so that others might be blessed by the work of the church. The morning's offering will now be given and received. Thank you. We receive with gratitude all generous gifts of time, talent, and treasure, and together we bless them and those who gave in faith, hope, and love. Amen.
Which one? Thank you. I got a story, but first I need a couple of brave volunteers. And before you volunteer, what I need are a couple of brave volunteers who don't mind acting out something. You can be of any age. I need just two people who'd be willing to act out flying on a trapeze. Do I have anybody willing to run from safety? See that? Okay. I got one. I need one more. Brave soul. Act out flying on a trapeze. You can do it. Come on. My introverts are like, not a chance. Yeah, there we go. Okay. Sorry. Yes, that's good. Especially while I try and figure out where the rest of the story is. Tell me, this is not my day. Where's the... I don't know what I did with it. Okay, well, this should prove interesting. Can I borrow yours? Thank you. See, it takes a community. Thank you. I just need... Okay. Let's try this again without the whoops. Those of you who know Independence Day. All right. So just, you know, act it out as you feel comfortable. You can act between each other or not. The most important thing is risk and have fun. This is called The Flying Trapeze, from the Essene Book of Days by Dannon Perry. Sometimes I feel that my life is a series of trapeze swings. I'm either hanging on to a trapeze bar, swinging along for a few moments. I'm hurtling across space between trapeze bars. Mostly I spend my time hanging on for dear life to the trapeze bar of the moment. It carries me along at a certain steady rate of swing, and I have the feeling that I'm in control. I had no idea what we were getting. I know most of the right questions and even some of the right answers. But once in a while, as I'm merrily or not so merrily swinging along, I look ahead of me, and in the distance, what do I see? I see another trapeze bar looking at me. It's empty. And I know in that place in me that knows that this new bar has my name on it. It is my next step, my growth, my aliveness coming to get me. In my heart of hearts, I know that for me to grow, I must release my grip on the present well-known bar to move on to the new one. Each time it happens, I hope. No, I pray that I won't have to grab that new bar. But in my knowing place, I know that I must totally release my grasp on my old bar. And for some moments in time, I must hurtle across space before I can grab the new bar. Each time I do this, I am filled with terror. Terror. I know you're having fun, but this is a terror moment. It doesn't matter that in all of my previous hurdles, I have always made it. Each time I am afraid I will miss, that I will be crushed on unseen rocks in the bottomless basin between bars. But I do it anyway. I must. Perhaps this is the essence of what the mystics call faith. No guarantees, no net, no insurance. But we do it anyway, because hanging on to that old bar is no longer an option. And so, for what seems like an eternity, but actually lasts a microsecond, I soar across the dark void. The past is over and the future is not yet here. It's called a transition. I have come to believe that it is the only place that real change occurs. I have noticed that in our culture, this transition zone is looked upon as a nothing, a no place between places. Sure, the old trapeze bar was real, and as far as the new one coming towards me, I hope that one's real too. But the void in between? That's just scary, confusing, disorienting, nowhere that must be gotten through as fast and as unconsciously as possible. What a shame. I have a sneaking suspicion that the transition zone is the only real thing, and the bars are the illusions we dream up to not notice the void. Yes, with all the fear that can accompany transitions, they are still the most vibrant, growth-filled, passionate moments in our lives. And so, transformation of fear may have nothing to do with making the fear go away, but rather with giving ourselves permission to hang out in that transition zone between the bars. Allowing ourselves to dwell in the only place where change really happens. It can be terrifying. It can also be enlightening. Hurtling through the void, we must learn to fly. We cannot discover new oceans unless we have the courage to lose sight of the shore. And so ends the story. Can you do one last whoosh for us? Bravery comes in all forms. We need slide 19, Richard Bach. There we go. Here, and you can have this back, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. No, you can't. I take it back. Yes, thank you. Remember when I said it only printed half the sermon once? Kind of like it today. Any readers of Richard Bach, Illusions, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, there's a whole bunch of them out there. I grew up on those books. One always caught my imagination. So this is from his book, Running from Safety. This is from the chapter titled, Running from Safety. It must happen to us all, I thought. We pack up what we've learned so far and leave the familiar behind. No fun, that shearing separation. But somewhere within, we must dimly know that saying goodbye to safety brings the only security we'll ever know. How many times do we do it in our lives? Hundreds? We run from the safety of family to the strangers of the playground. Run from the safety of friends next door into the cauldron of school. From the safety of listening in class to the terror of giving our own oral report. From the peaceful stillness of the high dive platform to the whirling test of a 2.5 gainer. I think he's being ambitious. From the simple ease of English into the umlaut deeps of German. From the warmth of dependence into the ice of on our own. From the cocoon of training into the whirlwind of business. From the shelter of the ground into the lovely hazards of flight. From the certainty of singledom to the stormy faith of marriage. From the worn jacket comfort of living into the ominous adventure of dying. Every step in every proud life is a run from safety into the dark, and the only thing to trust is what we think is true. I invite you now into a time of prayer. meditation or contemplation as your own personal spiritual practice. I invite you to be present in this room here and now, to feel your body on the pews, to notice your breath. So often we are in go mode. And for now, I want you to be in hear mode. Think about your pinky toe or the bottom of your foot or the crook of your elbow. Just pick one spot that you don't normally spend a lot of time thinking about. And notice how it's feeling right now. Is it cold or hot? Itchy? Maybe you don't feel anything at all. Just be present in this moment, and as you are noticing this, take a deep breath in and out. And now I want you to take a deep breath in so your neighbor can hear you. In and out. And one more time, in and out. We open our loving minds and our thoughtful hearts this day, aware of the people here gathered in a world in trial and discomfort, a world of uncertainty. We offer blessings and prayers to Ferguson and to all of St. Louis and to all of us affected by the actions happening there. May we refuse to believe what the television is telling us, and be with the real people here and now. For those fearing for their lives, may they know strength and comfort. And for those assured of their comfort, may they know affliction and disorientation. May they be moved to action. May we learn to be together in presence and in love, knowing that we are enough, though we are never, ever perfect. That we can do what we can do each day. And though we may fall, we will rise and learn from those times. And for those facing transitions in your lives, kids going to school for the first time, moving to new states, living with illness or healing, all those times of transition and uncertainty, may you hang in the space of uncertainty. Look around. Know you will not be consumed by that moment, and learn from that space. And for all those in times of joy and celebration, may you lift up your hearts, may you share your good news, may you smile and laugh, for the world needs more smiles and more laughter. I invite you now into a time of silent meditation, contemplation, or prayer, as is your own personal spiritual practice. back into this space. Taking a deep breath in and out. Now loud enough that your neighbor can hear you, in and out. Blessed be. Who's our whistler in the back? Who is it? Hi. The true art of meditation is to be present no matter what's going on around you. And I learned to study meditation next to a set of train tracks. There are all kinds of ways. I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow. And join in singing hymn number 354, We Laugh, We Cry.
Thank you.
adventuring together. I think one of the most spiritual movies out there is a wonderful film called Finding Nemo. Who's seen Finding Nemo? If you haven't, adult or youth, it is worth watching. In seminary, we used to say that Finding Nemo was our call story. And it is a story about running from safety. Running from the certainty of our lives and risking bravery, though we may fear being eaten by a shark or a whale. There is a particular moment in the story that really, I think a lot of ministers look at that and they think that's the call to ministry. But honestly, I think it's the call to us leaving any kind of certainty we may know. I can't remember the name of Nemo's father. Who is it? Marlin, right. Right, the name of the fish. Okay, so Marlin is hanging out with Dory. Now, Dory is this kind of forgetful, weird, quirky fish, played by Ellen DeGeneres, so you can imagine, she lives it up. And Marlin has a hard time trusting Dory because he sees her as this kind of forgetful, weird, odd fish. And she insists that she knows how to speak whale. And he doesn't believe it for a second. Because she keeps doing this thing like, "How are you?" Right? And it just sounds like she's making stuff up and not actually speaking whale. And so at some point, they get eaten by this whale that she's talking to. At least so Marlin thinks. And so they're sitting inside the whale's mouth with all the krill, which is actually what the whale was wanting to eat. And Dory's doing her, "We are stuck in here" stuff, right? And Marlin's like, "Just stop it, okay, stop it. You don't speak whale." And he is in a total moment of disbelief. We've all had those moments, right? You're stuck in the mouth of a whale. Not an actual whale. Don't take me literally here. You're stuck in a moment that feels scary and unsure, and you don't know what's going to happen next, and it's hard to trust anybody around you because everything says fight or run. We all know those moments. And so, at some point, the whale starts to lift its head up, and all the water goes to the back of its throat, and Marlin and Dory are hanging on to a giant taste bud on the tongue of this whale. And Dory says, "I think it's telling us to let go." And Marlin says, "How do you know?" She goes, "I don't." And she lets go and falls into the back of the whale's mouth. And finally, at some point, Marlin realizes he just can't fight anymore. And he lets go. And he falls into the back of the mouth of the whale. And what happens? Gets spewed out the top through the whale's hole at the top and back out into the water. And it generally kind of feels like that when you let go. It's not like, "Yeah, I let go and everything is good." It's like, "Oh my God, I let go and now I'm being hurtled into the sky and about to land God knows where in what puddle of water." It's scary. And it's transformative. And it's good and normal and healthy, even if it feels like it's awful and I shouldn't be here. The truth of the matter is, for some of you, when you heard that Kleber was leaving, this is a familiar story. For some of you, when you heard that various families were moving to various places across the country, including Minnesota and DC and Florida, it felt the same way. How will we move forward in this time of change and transition? Everybody's leaving us. Everybody's jumping out of the ship. And we're here hanging on to that taste bud for dear life. How often do you hear that statement? Hanging on to that taste bud for dear life. That is running from safety. That is that experience in that deep essence. I encourage you to go watch Finding Nemo and figure out which part of that running from safety story is yours, because there's a bunch of them, the sharks who agree they'll never eat fish again, They have a 12-step group and everything. Marlon, who tries to keep his son from going out into the world, going to school, is afraid of letting his son run from safety into the world. We all have those moments. Khalil Gibran once said, "The miracle is not to walk on water. The miracle is to walk on the green grass, living fully in the moment and feeling truly alive." How often do we go through our days just walking in our own shoes, not really being in the moment? Because uncertainty can be overwhelming. And yet, uncertainty is the only truth we have, other than death and taxes, right? Who here likes that feeling of uncertainty? Who here, yeah, not a hand went up in case anybody's wondering. Who here likes feeling safety? I know I do. Yeah. It's hard to run from that safety. It's a place of assurance. And yet the truth is, there's very little that stands still. At the very least, we must remember, we are on a planet hurtling through the universe at millions of light years an hour. Just hurtling around a sun that is also hurtling even faster around the solar system, that's hurtling even faster around the galaxy. There is no such thing as the safety of stillness, just the illusion of that safety. And so we come to this interim time, this time where we flung off of the trapeze bar and are hanging in that blood-curdling moment in between. Now, you may not quite feel like you're in that moment yet. You may still think you're still holding on to that last bar. Or you may believe you've actually gone ahead and gripped the next one. I'll tell you, you haven't if you think you have. It's my job sometimes to, you know, afflict the comfortable. But also to comfort the afflicted. In this time of transition where it feels like there's lack of certainty, here's a few things to know. One, you're not the first congregation to go through it. It's not the first time this congregation has gone through it. Two, we know certain things about communities going through these transitions time. And what's really great is that learning as a community how to go through these transition times help us as individuals go through those times and helps our country and our world go through it. Because goodness knows our country does not know how to handle uncertainty. Right? We do not teach our children the emotional intelligence, the skills to handle uncertainty. Which means we never learned it ourselves unless we had some particularly awesome parents. And some of us have. It's not to say that we all haven't learned these things. But we don't have it as a societal norm. To say yes, poop happens. Remember my lesson from last week. Those of you who weren't here, I talked about pig poop. It happens, and it makes your food grow. It's a good thing, as long as you're not eating it directly. What we've learned from interim times is that there's an emotional arc to things, that communities go through these normal changes and transitions, and that we can anticipate some of it. Dr. William Bridges, in his book, Managing Transitions, describes an important thing, the difference between change and transition, and it's really important to understand this. Change is situational. The move to a new site, the retirement of the founder, the reorganization of the roles on the team, the revisions to the pension plan. Transition, on the other hand, is psychological. It is a three-phase process that people go through as they internalize and come to terms with the details of the new situation that change brings about. We may adapt to the change, but how do we respond to the transition? And the three stages are these. The first one is the ending, the losing, the letting go. And honestly, we will be in that ending, losing, and letting go phase for another few months. This is not something that happens all at once, it's a process. And if you look at the arc of things, the majority of the congregation is in that ending, losing, letting go phase. When we get to the end of this process, there will still be some people and that ending, losing and letting go phase. It doesn't just end because the transition or the change time has come to a conclusion. We always will have some grief and loss and change. Some of you may remember past ministers of this congregation that you miss, and you still are grieving that. Or maybe you remember when this congregation was a little bit bigger, or when there was a choir, or when there was this or that. You may still grieve those changes. We don't always let go as quickly as we would like to. The second phase is called the neutral zone. And no, there aren't Romulans on the other side, as far as I know. Or the Federation. I guess it depends on if you're a Romulan or Federation. I don't want to assume. The neutral zone is that in-between place in which we do things like look at what we have learned from the time before, compare it to other times before. We use the time in between as I start to teach you new skills and information and compare what I'm teaching you and telling you and what the region will teach you and tell you to what you used to know. And you will make decisions about who you want to be now and how you want to go forward. Because we know Kleber changed this place, right? At least I hope. Otherwise, you paid him a whole lot of money for nothing. This community changed. It changed because people who are here and who have gone. It's changed because there are people here now that weren't here a few years ago. And there will be new people who come in, and there will be youth who get to tell us what they think and how they feel about the future of this church, and there will be all these opportunities. The thing we know about the neutral zone is that immense change is possible in that time, because you figure, if you're already in emotional upheaval, what's a little more? You have the great capacity to explore and experiment and change. And here's the most important thing. In those times when you're feeling fearful or uncertain, ask yourself, are you being reactive or responsive? Reactive is when I just speak from that emotional place and I'm not thinking. And those moments will happen, and that's okay. It's what we do with those moments afterwards. Responsive means being aware of how you feel in the moment, being with it without trying to change it. As Orion Mountain Dreamer puts it, without trying to hide or fade or fix it. Any fixiters out there? I know I like to fix my emotions as quickly as possible. There are more of you than that. I know that for sure. Like, two hands went up. Okay. I'm guessing you're probably a fix-it person. Yeah, okay. I pick on Mary because I visited with her now once. And I have no fear that she'll get me back. So in that neutral zone place, it's that place in between the trapezes. When there's this fear and uncertainty, and in about 6 months, some of you will be very mad at me. And you might think it's because I made this change, or I did that, or I said that. When in truth, it's just how you're feeling in the moment. Does that make sense? It's a normal emotional curve. Every community goes through it. So much so that corporations now have interim leaders that come in and hold companies in that space. Congregations now do this. This is becoming normal, not just in Unitarian Universalism, but in Christian churches and Jewish churches and in Muslim masjids and all kinds of places, recognizing that people don't just change quickly. We need time to freak out a little bit and have that be okay. Now, can you imagine if we let our Congress have 2 years to freak out before we let them vote on anything? What difference might that make in them, right? They need their freak-out moment. They also need accountability, but they need their freak-out moment. We need to be able to give the world time to change and transition, which is why I know we're never going to accomplish everything I would love the world to accomplish in my lifetime, because it's a process. It doesn't happen just because we want it to. So we're in that neutral zone time. And then after that becomes the new beginning. And this is one of those processes where you begin with the end and you end with the beginning. And in that new beginning phase is this time of excitement and wonderment and imagining what's possible, a zest, a zeal for being in this community and thinking of what's possible and knowing that there might be a new minister out there who meets you where you are. And at that time, when you're in that new beginning phase, new people want to join in because they'll get excited too.
and it's just this whole different place. But we can't get there without spending a bit of time in that neutral zone place. I also want to be abundantly clear. You may be legitimately mad at me about things at times. That's not to say that that won't happen. But what I know from the interim process, my own experience of it, and many of my colleagues going through it, is that from now until about January, February, everything's going to be good. We're going to be trying new stuff. We're going to be with each other. There'll be some services about grief and letting go. And then, sometime in February to April, something's going to happen. There's going to be a conflict. But what we know is conflict is helpful, and it is good. And it does not always have to mean a fight. We often think that. In his book, Leading Change in the Congregation by Gilbert R. Rendell, he says, we make a few assumptions about this process time. First, that we are seeking new learnings, not following old rules. This is a time at looking at what's possible, what's learning. And if I can pick on Brenda for a minute, you know, there's a new learning coming in living with a daughter that you probably haven't lived with for a while, right? There's a new learning that comes to that. If we just keep trying to do the same old thing as we always have, it's not going to work. New patterns emerge. We tend to focus on decisions and actions, but what we really need to focus on is reflection and connection. So there will be a number of opportunities in these coming months to reflect, to share feedback, to really ask you to consider, what did you really learn? How were you changed by that time with Kleber? Not just by Kleber, but by the community of that time. How are you different today? And the change will produce conflict, which is good and not to be avoided. Conflict never feels good, but we all know and have experienced the difference between conflict that was valuable and conflict that was not. Everybody know the difference? Conflict that was valuable and conflict that wasn't. We tend to think that all conflict will be awful, right? In that grumpy cat sort of awful. Conflict is two or more ideas in the same place at the same time, which means we are in conflict right now. And that is kind of the Unitarian Universalist norm, right? To at least two, if not, you know, two people in the room, there's at least 10 ideas. Conflict is the engagement and working out of our differences. So how are we going to work through this time of transition and be together? Another assumption is that we need to appreciate experimentation and failure. How many of you enjoy failure? I've learned to enjoy it. It's taken me a lot of practice. Learning to enjoy failure is a practice. There are definitely times. As I mentioned last week, we are like everyone who came before us and everyone who come after, simply learning to walk. And when you learn to walk, what happens? You fall. And our children learn a lot by how we respond to that falling. If a parent comes up, oh my God, are you okay? The child starts to think maybe something should be wrong, whether it is or isn't. If a parent ignores the fact that they fail, they may feel like they have to do it all on their own. If they're lovingly present and paying attention and saying, hey, get up, let's do it and continue on, and then only really kind of do something if there's an actual cut or bruise, then a different thing is learned. We need to be together. And so we utilize a tool called appreciative inquiry that allows us to consider, and so some of you have done interviews with me in which I ask you to tell me the strengths and the growing edges. What does the congregation do well? And what does the congregation need to learn about? Rather than focusing on what we've done wrong or failed at, what do we need to learn? And all of this is essentially a spiritual path. And I want to close with that. This is all a spiritual path. When I talk about spirituality, I mean things that help us make meaning out of life and help us connect to our world. Pema Chodron describes a spiritual awakening as a journey to the top of a mountain that is upside down. Take that image in for a minute. Take Mount Everest, flip it upside down, and you are trying to reach the summit of that upside down mountain. Instead of transcending the suffering of all creatures, we move towards turbulence, she writes. We move toward turbulence and doubt however we can. We explore the reality and the unpredictability of insecurity and pain. At our own pace, without speed or aggression, we move down and down and down, and with us move millions of others, our companions in awakening from fear. And at the bottom, we discover water, the healing water of bodhicitta. Bodhicitta is our heart, our wounded, softened heart. Right down there in the thick of things, we discover the love that will not die. The love is bodhicitta. It is gentle and warm. It is clear and sharp. It is open and spacious. The awakened heart of bodhicitta is the basic goodness of all beings. The basic goodness of all beings. And to arrive there, we need to go deep into the world of despair and uncertainty. And what's interesting when you go into that world is it's easier to see joy and life. The universe is full of contradiction. It's part of what makes it beautiful. So last night, my computer popped up with this virus malware thing, and McAfee couldn't fix it. And so I called customer service. Actually, no, I chatted with customer service. You know, and this is hit or miss, right? Depends on the company. And, you know, I get Krishna, or Chris. I'm sure he had to change his name to Chris for the Americans, who I'm sure was in India somewhere, because he admitted it was daytime where he was, and it was definitely night where I was. So I wished him a good night, or day, and he wished me a good night. You know, it was all that. And so we're just kind of chatting back and forth. And he says, well, what are you, you know, it's Saturday night. What are you doing? I said, well, I'm working on my sermon. You know, sure, he was thinking I'm going to go out to the bar. No. You know, I'm working on my sermon. Oh, you're a minister. And he asked me what I was preaching about. And I said this. And we started getting into this spiritual discussion while we're waiting for my computer to finish its scan. And I talked about the fact that, you know, change is a fact, and that we have to run from the safety and be open to being into uncomfortable and difficult places. And, you know, that it's a practice. And he said, yes, it's a spiritual practice. And they should know that that means regular practice, that you have to keep doing it again and again. From the mouths of an IT guy around the world, he would like you to know, and he told me this, that it takes practice, and it is worthy of doing. It takes practice to be in those uncomfortable places, to be afraid or sad or totally in grief, and not try and leave it, but go through. In the next 2 years, we will spend some time in the endings, as I said. A lot of time in that neutral zone. Look out for Romulans. And perhaps maybe a month together in that beginnings phase, if a new settled minister is called. And know that there's a possibility that we could get to the end of 2 years, and your search committee could say, we don't have the right minister right now. If they say that, that generally means they've done their job well, because it's more important you get the right minister than the minister that's available. And I think you've already learned that as a congregation. Don't forget that lesson. But as we move into that beginning phase, you'll be looking forward to another interim or to that next minister and continue moving towards the future. And that, this is a time that will be a major difficulty for some and deeply energizing, like the battery bunny, for others. Some of you will be like, yes, chains and transformation, woo! And others are going to look at you like, you are nuts. This is terrible. I can't believe we agreed to do this. Where did we find this person? What is going on? Okay, it will happen. However, I know one thing is true. Time keeps on slipping, slipping, slipping into the future. In other words, this too shall pass. We all learn something from this time and will hopefully be meaningful and useful to you. I cannot say enough about how much these 2 years are about an emotional process. It's easy to focus on the practical, but there are no quick fixes to the heart. However, our world does need people who are skilled, who have emotional intelligence and practical skills on how to be emotionally responsive rather than reactive. Can you imagine if certain politicians learn to be responsive and not reactive? Perhaps they wouldn't threaten to throw journalists over railings. If, as James Luther Adams said, we come to church to learn how to be fully human, then this is a deeply spiritual work that matters to healing ourselves, our congregations, and our communities the world over. So I invite you into a learner's mind for these next 2 years, into a loving mind, into a community that is willing to stumble and fall together in order to learn how to walk all over again, perhaps with a little kick in the step. So let us fling through the air. I'm sure you won't forget that imagery anytime soon. For the next trapeze, knowing that we are the net, the acrobat and the trapeze, and we will find that next bar together. May it be so. I invite you to rise as your spirits and bodies allow and join in singing hymn number 1017, We Are Building a New Way. Do y'all know this song?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. I've heard enough yeses to be convinced. Here we go. Let's see, I split you down the middle last time, right? I'm going to invite the folks in front half of the room, so the row just behind the chandelier there, for me, to turn around and face the people behind you. Wave, smile, pay attention to folks who may be a little short. I know I'm in that camp and I feel for you. Feel free to move in the aisle if you need to. We're all friends here. This is your sacred and holy community. Whether you're going to Minnesota, or just across the river, or a house down the street, we are here for you. When you need us, you can call us. We will be there for you. This world needs people who are willing to walk into uncertainty, to leap off that trapeze, whether they fall or not. Think about places like Ferguson. Think about places like Syria and Israel. Think about this world that needs our wisdom and our light and are willing to say yes to life even in those moments of uncertainty. We are the people we've been waiting for. And so I invite you to say yes to life. yes to life. May it be so.